Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we were talking a little lawn care off the air. Exciting middle-aged man talk. Pipe, you and I mow our own lawns. Ronald doesn't. Well-documented here on this program. We're going to take a quick break. And then the break at the top of the show, which everybody loves. I've gotten so much positive feedback on that. People love getting like 35 seconds into a show and then going right to an ad break. So we're going to do that. Then we're going to get back, talk a little lawn care, a couple of other random listener-submitted things. We'll be back in 1 second.
But look around you. Your family, your faith, they're not in the way. They are the way.
From the creators of Jesus Revolution comes the incredible true story.
It's going to be dangerous and scary and giving up. It's not an option.
The story of one family's journey from down under to center stage. Unsung Hero, a For King and Country film starring Candace Cameron Bure and Terry O'Quinn. In theaters now. Visit unsunghero.movie to learn more. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, we're back. Ronald, you don't mow your own lawn. Pipe and I do. When was the last time you've cut the grass, Ron? When was the last time you like pulled a mower out of a shed or a garage and like filled it with gas and hit that little button three times and like mowed a lawn? When was the last time that happened?
So the last time Melissa did that was
oh, you're one of those guys, dude. Are you really one of those guys? Because I know dudes like that.
Yeah, you know lots of dudes like that. Yeah, I'm one of them.
Dudes who make their wife cut the grass?
Well, I mean, I made my wife cut the grass. Now we're getting into a different discussion.
Is this super feminist or like super hierarchical? Which are we like? Did you make
Pipe,
her,
I don't know.
Or are you giving her the opportunity to do math for it?
I feel like it's hierarchical, if that's a word. I don't know. No, Big M didn't like. I cannot stand mowing lawns, and Big M didn't seem to mind it. So she's like, oh, I'll just do it. I said, that's awesome. And then at some point I said, you know, I feel like you're wasting time and I can't stand to watch you do that. So let's just get somebody to do it. And then it'll actually be done really well too at that point.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So. Okay. So yeah, still two things, a question and a story. When was the last time you mowed the lawn?
It was like probably, it's been years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Decades?
No, because I didn't grow up in a culture where anybody mowed their own lawn. So in Southern California, everybody has lawn care. So it wasn't something I did as a kid ever.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Lawn care is so cheap out there that like you would be ridiculous to not get it done.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so not Midwestern. Like if
you know what, guys,
Midwest,
I know.
It's a true status symbol.
Well, I know. Let me tell you, because everybody I talk to, this is what they say. Oh, you know what, Ronnie, man? I actually love mowing my lawn. It gives me some downtime. I put in the AirPods. I listen to a pod. I mean, so that's what I literally get from everybody, you know? And I actually don't really tell too many people that we do the lawn care because it's so judgy out here.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there's lawn care businesses that are in business because people don't mow their own lawns. But everybody is so, it's like a culture out here. And it frankly drives me a little batty, to be honest with you. But, you know, to each his own.
Now, what about it drives you batty? Just because they disagree with you? Because they're going the other way than you are?
No, not necessarily that. I mean, because I don't care that they mow their own lawn. I just care that they care that I don't. So it's just like, you guys, mow your lawn or don't mow your lawn. Like, I probably do something that you pay for. you know, to get done, like in some other like aspect of our
now,
lives.
What would that be?
Doubtful.
What,
doubtful, right?
Yeah, doubtful. Doubtful. What would it be that you would do that they would pay for?
I don't know, because now I'm thinking you're probably right, because I would never like change my own oil, and they all change their own oil, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So I just like to pay everybody to do as many things for me as possible.
You're really good for the local economy. I think everybody,
super good.
Every service provider should be grateful for you.
You know, when you're an elite man of the people, to keep that elite status, boys, you got to pay people to do things. You know?
Pipe, we got to become sojourn pastors. You work like 7 Sundays a year, and and apparently there's just an unlimited pile of cash with which to pay people to do all kinds of
things. I mean, also part of it is that I don't know how to do things, boys. I'm not a DIY guy, so there's some major, understandable things that like go into that, right? I'm not a handy guy, so it's just it's not who I am.
I have a sneaking suspicion that all of those services in Ashland, Ohio are cheaper, maybe not than Jackson, but than Nashville. Like, I save money by mowing my own lawn. I kind of bet that it's not that expensive to pay lawn care in middle of Ohio.
It's okay, so here's what's weird, right? So it's more expensive here than it was in California. It's probably double the price. And but it's not what I would say. Again, everybody has their own like subjective opinion on what quote unquote expensive is, right? So it's just worth it to me because it's not a task I enjoy. But there's also this like this Midwest frugality that says and I get in arguments with people about this all the time, which is if I can do it, if I can save money, it's worth it. And then I said, yeah, but you are spending time. So like that 2 hours, you could be doing something else with that 2 hours. And so it's like you either spend money or you either spend time. And most people think, well, no, spending money is the only thing I'm trying to avoid. And it's like, well, right, but you are spending time.
So. Ronnie Martin, small town pastor, going to war with the entire Midwest. You have to have a chapter on this in the book, baby. That'll be insightful. I've let my wife mow one time, and it was after I broke my collarbone in a semi-pro football game, and I was in a sling, and I got out there like with one arm and was pushing the mower, and she was like, "Get inside, you're ridiculous. I'm not letting you do this." That was the one time, but I do know guys who do it. I'll be driving around and I'll see like a friend's house and his wife will be out there like cutting the grass, and I'm like, I don't get this.
I mean, you also let your wife handle hot pots and pans. This is not that different. I mean,
I do though. Yeah, I know. I guess it's not all that different.
I have a question for you, Ted. What would Ted Kluck Sr. have thought if he rolled up while KK was pushing the mower around the lawn? Like, had he seen that? And while you're inside, you know, luxuriating, what would his response have been?
I think he would have judged me to high heaven. That would have been a low moment between us, you know. He would have never let my mom mow the lawn. In fact, I don't know what they did about the lawn after my dad had open heart surgery. He probably, I don't know, I guess they had to hire it out.
No, what happened is somebody from their church picked it up for them. 100%.
I'm sure that's true.
What like Midwestern small town churches do. Like, somebody has surgery, somebody's out there mowing the lawn without being asked, and probably at like 6:45 a.m. on a Saturday, and somebody else is dropping
that's
off
true.
Just those the big like Pyrex dishes inside the wicker basket full of hot dish or casserole or whatever.
Dude,
you
totally.
Call it in your region of the Midwest.
Pipe, obviously you have it, you've nailed it. But that's the other pet peeve I have too, is just the glee that dudes have about mowing their lawn, and the fact that they do it at times that are completely out of control, like 5 a.m. And then not only that, but it feels like, dude, you mowed this morning. It's 3 p.m. Why are you mowing again? I feel like they just want to mow as much as possible. And it literally drives me up the wall because it's loud and crazy, you know?
Okay. So it's a noise thing. It's the loudness of it that drives
you. Yeah. And Big M doesn't mind, but it absolutely drives me crazy.
I think there's something else to it though. I think it's deeper than the noise, baby. I mean, I think there's something baked into it that like, you feel like, now could there be, okay, let's do this 2 minutes, just as far as a hypothetical. I happen to know that there is a Midwestern guy in your life whom you really love and respect. Like, you would take a bullet for this guy. And it's your best friend, at Jared C. Wilson. Okay? Now, could there be a scenario where he gets you, like, you're at his house in Kansas City, and you're all done dreaming your big dreams and talking about ministry and publishing and all the projects you're going to do. And Jared's like, you know, come on out back here with me for a minute. And you're like, where are you going with this, Jared? And he's like, I want to show you something. And he walks you back out to the shed, and he gets you on his little Cub Cadet riding mower. And there's a he's built like a, you know, the baby seats Piper on the bikes that there used to be in the 80s and 90s. He's got a little baby seat for little Ronnie Martin there on the back.
Wow.
And he gets you on that Cub Cadet, dude, and your little pompadours waving around in the breeze. And you have a really nice experience with it. Could that change your mind?
I mean, that would never happen.
Why would it never happen?
I don't want to mow a lawn, and I don't want to be on the back of somebody.
You don't want to be in Jared Wilson's baby seat while he's mowing the lawn.
No, because
even if he dangled, like, you can speak on the Subsage C at my next pastoral conference.
No, I just think it's Jared has less free time than anybody I've known. So I actually judge him for mowing his lawn. I don't get it. Mm. It makes no sense to me. You know,
even if he said, Ronnie, I enjoy it. It's relaxing to me. It helps me unwind.
I just don't believe anybody that says it. I think they're just motivated by the cash.
Mm. The cash or the ability to say, I do this myself.
Yeah, there's probably something of that too. There is kind of a, like, you guys would know about this, but there is kind of a weird, like, people are, like, fastidious about, like, their lawn care, just their landscaping around here. So there is kind of this, like, you know, you puff the chest out because you do a great job. It's kind of like almost for people, like, it's their art. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Or it's competitive.
Or it's competitive, yeah. It's like the whole, it's both of those things. So I think, yeah, it gives everybody a chance to do something, make something look beautiful, which I'm not against that. I think that's awesome. But again, mow your lawn to your heart's content. But you just shouldn't look at anybody weird if they don't. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Piper, you haven't had a chance to weigh in on this yet. Where are you at on it? I want to hear the do-it-yourself aspect or the would you ever let your wife do it aspect.
My wife would never let me let my wife do it. So
yeah, I get that.
I think that, like, she was quite pleased when we got married to find out that I'm one of those oddities who actually does enjoy mowing the lawn. Well, I enjoy it most of the time. It does get hotter than, like, Satan's armpit here, and so there are times of the year when I don't enjoy it at all, but it is generally an enjoyable task for me because I have a pretty small lawn. So yeah, and also I'm Midwestern. I am not fastidious about lawn care. I want the house that nobody notices lawn-wise. Like,
yeah,
it is.
There you go.
It is kept.
Let it be neutral.
Yeah, kept to the place where nobody says, "Goodness, they let that go to seed," or "Wow, well, you did a really nice job." I want it to be utterly neutral. It's kind of the same way I wear clothes. If nobody ever commented on what I wore, I'd be happy. I also would be happy if nobody ever commented on my lawn. Both of
that's
which
interesting,
which is, I think those are, I have a different approach to both of those things than Ronnie. I think.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Pipe. Shoot, I feel like I had a follow up and, I don't know. I lost it. What about your small town pastor partner there? Big R, is he cut his own grass? This could be a chapter, you know, this could be like some nice interplay in the book.
Dude, I don't know. He lives in a really weird area. It's like a beachy area. They might be all super long cared out there, man. I really don't know. We never talked about it.
So neither of you are actually small town pastors. He's a beach pastor.
He's a beach pastor. Well, I mean, I do actually live in a small town, but yeah.
You do.
I mean, you don't have to consider me a small town pastor. That's your prerogative, but yeah.
Boys, let's take a break. Shoot, I feel like I had a money one more lawn care thing that was going to be really good and really funny, but it's bad radio to sit and kind of dither about it until it comes back. So let's take a break, and we'll get back and get to a listener-submitted question.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, boys, we're back. Enough lawn care talk to last us a lifetime.
We are middle-aged men. That's enough lawn care talk to last us until this afternoon when Ronnie's neighbor is mowing again.
100, yeah, exactly. Man. He'll be out there. Don't worry. He will be
out there. Is he a listener?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he would have been if it was Trogues still. Remember when Trogues was your neighbor?
Dude, it feels like so long ago, and it was only just like a year ago.
Where was Trogues at on lawn care? Was he a do-it-yourself guy or a hired-out guy?
Oh, dude, he would be a total... I mean, he's a classic Midwesterner. He'd be a total DIY.
Dude, I remember my question. Like, in this harkens back to something that happened at my house earlier this summer. So we had a kitchen renovation done, and I didn't do any of that myself.
What? How could you shop that out, T? I don't understand.
Well, exactly, because I can't do any of it, right? Like, I literally, I have none of those skills.
I can't imagine having somebody else do my kitchen reno. That is so weird, man. It just baffles me when people have other people do their kitchen renos.
I see what you're doing here. Yeah, I do. I see what you're doing, and I appreciate it. But here's my question, though. And this was, like, a thing that I noticed happening inside me as this was happening in my house. I would sit there each day, like... tapping away at my keyboard while noticing like actual real men doing real work in my house. And I felt like I could feel my testosterone plummeting like in the moment. And my question to you is, since this is an experience you have every week, like, does it bother you at all? Cause it bothered me a little bit. And not that like, I'm going to be good at everything. Like, oh, I should know how to renovate a kitchen or whatever. But like, there was something about, like, real men in my house doing real work while I did... I wrote my stupid little graphic novels or whatever story I was working on. It felt really kind of strange. Did that feel strange to you at all? Or does it?
No, I honestly... To be serious here for 1.6 seconds, I get what you're saying. And yeah. I literally just don't care, man. I want to be in the kitchen writing my graphic novel while they're working on it. And I'm so happy when somebody is doing something that I either can't do or don't want to do. Like, it fills me with joy. So it would just be the opposite because I just don't care.
I need to try this pipe. I think this is the experiment. Like, I need to hire out my lawn care for a summer and see if I get filled with the same joy, and maybe I would, and maybe it would be like a value added in my life. And,
you 100% will not. You will have like an existential moral level crisis where you need to like recommit your life to Jesus and the Midwest come August.
And my mower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll have to go. Yeah.
Dear John Deere, I'm recommitting my life to you.
Yeah. You're going to have to go get counseling for you and your John Deere mower to reconcile. It's not
just think
work.
Of all the time you'll gain. T, you can watch another, you can watch, you know, Swingers again. You can, I mean, there's so many things you, if you add up the time, so many things,
so many
you can
activities.
Be doing. Exactly.
Yeah. So many activities. I'm going to give it some thought. I am. All right. We've got a hard hitting question, and I get a kick out of the idea of this question. And I think you guys will understand what I mean. I have this sense that like, literally all of our listeners are like 27-year-old pastoral interns or like 33-year-old pastors. And this question speaks to that maybe being true. What's the hardest part of sermon prep?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
This question only comes up 19 times a day in my life.
It's... Yeah, this question only comes up like 93 times a year on this podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
I think for Ronnie, it's finding the right table to be at with the right lighting to lay out notebooks and commentaries that he's ignoring and take the perfect photo. That's the hardest part. And then once he's there, it all comes together.
Yeah, I probably spend more time taking the photo than I do on the actual.
That's right. Crap. Your answer to this would be lighting. You know, respectfully, it's lighting the sermon prep photo is the hardest.
I'm going to get in so much. I almost can't even. I'm going to get in so much trouble. I can't even answer this question. I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Like, now, for you, is it like hiring out the right guy to do your sermon prep? Do you hire that out too?
Hey, maybe? You know what? If I could do that and not lose my job, you better believe.
Dude, okay, Piper. Here's the visual. Like in the same vein of lawn care, like. It's one of those like clattering trailers that like rumble down the street, but instead of like weed whips and mowers on it, it's like commentaries lashed down with those straps, you know, and it pulls up to Ron's study, like
tweed wearing seminarians come tumbling out of the back.
You're
of
just
the
ringing the doorbell. Hey, so you need sermon prep today?
26-year-old guys ringing the doorbell. Hey, somebody here called for sermon prep.
Did you pay the extra monthly fee for the Greek exegesis, or are we just working in English here? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing with this area?
Did you guys pay extra for the photo? Like, we'll set up the background for the photo too.
Dude, that's a racket right there, man. That's a racket.
Full service sermon prep. That is a racket.
Actually, it is a racket, like, because you can like go to these websites and download, you know, other people's sermons.
That's so true. This is already happening. All right. So we should give this, like, I guess, a serious 2 minutes. Hardest part of sermon prep. Piper, what do you got?
That's it. It really, I mean, this, everybody hates the it depends answer, but it depends on like what the text is. I find the hardest part to be landing the sermon. Just
okay.
Everything before that, I mean, there's ebbs and flows, you know, there's commentaries and there's like, what's the main point? You kind of work through all that stuff. It is always hard to get to the point where you're like, I'm confident that I'm going to land this in a way that is satisfying to everyone. It always feels a little bit like, you know, you run the best race and then just kind of trip across the finish line. And, you know, you're like, well, that was disappointing. That it always kind of feels that way. It doesn't land well. And
and
it always feels like if I had prepared better, I could have landed it better, but I have yet to feel good about it, I think, at any point. So I think that's the hardest part, which is not that different. And maybe that's because of a writer mindset. It's not that different than writing chapters or writing books. Like, finishing a book is always the hard part. Like, how do you tie this thing off without being redundant or just being like, well, that's all, folks, kind of pulling the Porky Pig. And I've never felt great about those things.
Yeah. Interesting. Big R, besides the picture.
Oh, quick. That was the most Midwestern interesting. Ted does not care about this topic. Interesting. Next. That's how I feel about my sermon.
Dude, that's so true. Dude, is that a Midwest thing, saying interesting when you're not interested?
Yes. It is.
I feel
it
like
is
that's
the
universal. I don't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I grew up around it, so I assumed it was Midwest. It is the signal that you would like out of this conversation. Like, when you're at church talking to somebody, and they're just rambling on and on, you're like, interesting. What you're trying to tell
interesting.
Them is, wrap this thing up. Let's be done.
Please stop talking. Yeah.
Folks, welcome to the Art of Pastoring podcast. Is this what you and Jared talk about, like every episode, stuff like this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, when we used to do the podcast,
Is that thing coming back, dude?
Oh, it's coming back. You better believe.
Oh, it's coming back with a vengeance.
Believe you me, it's coming back.
Roaring back.
Roaring back like a lion, man, like Aslan.
Yeah, when like it's dangerous, but it's good.
Right, you know, right,
that
right,
should
right.
be the tag on the move.
Oh yeah.
I love it, dude. When is it coming back?
I mean, that's the question. I don't know.
It's a mystery. We're building a mystery,
right? Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you want to talk about sermon prep?
No, dude. I don't know, man. The intro is fun. Piece of cake. Ending, never an issue for me. It's that middle part where all the important content is that's really difficult for me. So in other words, like I do sermons where it's like I get these intros in 5 minutes, I get an outline in 5 minutes, I get the whole last page of application. It just comes to me like magic every time. I don't even, I barely have to think about it. And then that middle part where you actually got to like open a commentary and go, this is what the passage is actually saying. That's the part that's super hard because it gets into technicalities that I don't enjoy. Because I don't, it's a little, it becomes academic at that point in the process. And I just don't enjoy that. It's necessary, but I don't enjoy it.
Now I got an idea. What if you hire out just the middle part for the actual pulpit time? So you're up there, you're pulpiteering, man. You're putting in a, like an amazing 5 to 7 minutes of intro. People are laughing, people are crying. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to hand it over to Jim here. And like this, like seminarian, like ensconced in tweed comes like trundling up and he actually exposits the passage. And then you come back in to land the plane. I think this would be
it's a fantastic
level.
Idea. It's spectacular.
It's a fantastic.
But you know what's funny? It's like, so you're kind of, like, T, you're kind of describing, in my opinion, like what these big church dudes, when they have like their research assistants, that's kind of what's happening is they're getting those dudes to like open the commentaries and like, you know, give them all the stuff so that everything they're saying is true. But I mean, I guess they're not really doing that part. They're just taking all that information and, you know,
So, hey, you'll have to help me understand like the business of mega churches because I don't exactly know how this works. But and Piper, you could speak to this too. Like, so at a mega church, you've got the like cheekbony, handsome guy who's doing CrossFit 84 hours a week is the main guy, but he has on his staff a research assistant who's actually writing like the meat of the sermons so that the handsome guy can
there are companies that do this. Like you can, you have like a contract with them and you can send them kind of the parameters. Like I'm doing a sermon series on a book of the Bible and they'll like aggregate the commentary stuff. So you don't have to go do all the reading. They can just be like, this commentary says this, this emphasizes this. They'll basically, it's sort of like an executive summary, which is a phrase in and of itself that should make us all vomit a little bit. And they'll sort of do that for you. So you can just get the Cliff's Notes version of all of the research, or they can legitimately outline it for you. Like you could, there's like, the,
this is insane
you can
to me.
Pay
this
to,
sounds like,
oh, it is.
It sounds borderline like, satanic.
Well,
so these guys
are
playing a pastor on TV, essentially.
It's not like, everybody, though. That I mean, I think I've heard of some guys that have like interns that they'll have do some of the work like Pipe's describing. Yeah. But I don't, I mean, you know, just because you have a big church doesn't mean you're doing that, right? It's like, like people that, you know, I don't know. It's like people that like to mow their own lawns, they like to do their own sermon prep. So
So call me crazy. I feel like a pastor should do his own sermon.
Well, 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of a non-negotiable.
Well, because there's like this thing now. So you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but like some of these, you'll find out some of these more high profile or like big church dudes that have a little bit of a platform. Like sometimes it gets exposed that they've just been aping sermons, you know, off of websites. And I mean, they can go a long time before someone actually catches that, dude, that they're literally just word for word, like, you know, plagiarizing somebody else's sermon. And so it's probably a little more subtle if you're getting somebody to do some of the technical work for you, because, you know, technically speaking, like if they just give you a Cliff Notes version of a commentary, you still have to write your sermon that you just didn't spend the time. But you should spend the time is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
I would agree with
spend
that.
The time.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
For sure.
Well, and
like we're all
type anything else on sermon.
I think absolutely. Pastors should do their own sermon prep. I think there's a middle ground here that's not cheating. It is doing your own sermon prep, but it's also, it eases a burden. And it's like the way Ronnie described his sermon, like the part he hates most versus the part I hate most. If we sermon prepped together or kind of came at it and we're like, hey, this is what I've got, this is what you've got, we could help one another out with those respective portions. That's a different thing. So like people who do team sermon prep, they can benefit from each other, ease the burden, because some people are better at like the nerdy stuff, some people are better at the intro out, you know, landing application stuff. That's a different thing. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that got Driscoll in trouble was basically hiring out his sermon prep in full. Like they would just he would put his personality on somebody else's research work. Yeah, there was an issue at the last one of the last SBC presidential elections, because one of the guys who was up for it had been found to he had used J.D. Greer's sermons, and he had done it like with permission, but not he hadn't explicitly said like J.D. Greer preached this sermon. I'm going to kind of do the same thing here. And yeah, it gets really muddy, but it's also super easy to avoid if you're just not lazy and you give credit to other people. You know, if you just say, hey, so-and-so had a great sermon on this, and I'm going to pull portions of it because I found it so helpful. Ta-da, you're not plagiarizing. Yeah. You also had an easier Sunday sermon prep.
Yeah. And dude, that team concept, you know, a lot of churches have really like discovered that. I've spent some time doing it. It's super helpful because what you're doing is you're able to collaborate. So somebody comes up with a really great line, a really great kind of concept about something. And you can take that, and it's not like you're stealing it because you're just sharing information. You don't need to quote the person because you're just doing it together. You're talking through it together. And it definitely can kind of widen out your perspective and give you just a more fuller sermon, and also make it a little easier because, like Pipe just said, you know, you're just helping each other in your weaknesses. So that's probably something that more guys should do if they can do it. A lot of guys don't have that, you know, the availability. But
dude, there we go. We took what felt like a tired topic, and we unearthed some new insights about it in ways that really were interesting. And that's just not me being Midwestern saying interesting this time. I want to nuance that a little bit, put a fine point on it. Boys, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll hit one last quick topic.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, we're back. This last one, Piper, came to me ostensibly for the Happy Rant Sports podcast from a friend of mine in Canada, a longtime listener, Chris Harwood. Great dude, CFL fan. We've been chatting about the CFL for years, but he had a question that I initially thought, as an emissary of a SBC university, I probably can't talk about that. But it's intriguing, and maybe I'll just let you guys talk about it, and I'll stay conspicuously silent. The question is this: is sports gambling, like on the websites that sometimes get promoted on this podcast in the ad breaks, is sports gambling any different than like playing the stock market? So is getting an account on, I don't know, BetMGM Grand any different than like opening up a Robinhood account and throwing a couple $100 into it and reading 1.5 articles and like buying stocks? I thought it was an intriguing question. Pipe, what do you think?
I think they are fundamentally different, not necessarily morally, but in terms of just from the standard from the standpoint of risk, because if the stock market, you can look at hundreds of years of trends and say,
right,
by and large, if you make these kinds of investments, you can expect over a period of time these kinds of returns. And so there's there's risk in it, but that risk in gambling are slightly different things. Sports betting is chaos, you know.
Yeah,
it is a very small percentage of people who are successful at it and regularly profitable, because the outcomes are all over the map. And even the lines that you're betting against are primarily set to encourage betting, not because that is the most accurate depiction of an outcome. They want people to place the bet so that the house comes out ahead. So it's a rigged game if you're betting sports lines and things like that in some ways. So again, I'm not saying morally one should never bet sports, but from a like a wise use of money, one of these is in a different category than the other.
Well said. Baby?
Yeah, Matt, I don't. That was really good, Pipe. I like that.
It was.
I think. The only thing I've ever had conversations with people about in terms of like any kind of betting, sports betting, or you know, you're in Vegas is, you got to talk about a motivation. What's my end game here? You know, why am I doing what I'm doing? I mean, we need to ask that question with anything we do, including like lawn care. And then I think the other thing,
back to the lawn care,
and then. Yeah. I don't know, for some people, it gets into other things that kind of we can apply the same concept to, which is, are you able to do this in a way that is it just entertainment? Are you going to, do you spend $50 on something that's fun? Is this just something that you spend $50 on that's fun, for you? It's not something that you're looking to gain without, earning or, all of those kinds of things. Yeah. It brings up so many different questions. I think it's a matter of personal conscience. And if your conscience pushes against it, then you probably shouldn't do it. And I think that's when it becomes a moral issue for you. If it's something that you just don't feel good about before the Lord. And so I think you just got to ask those questions.
Yeah. Well said, boys. I agree with both of you.
All right, let me ask you quick. This is kind of an extension to Ronnie's answer.
Mm-hmm.
When is sports gambling or any kind of gambling wrong versus when is it fine? Because I think both are true. You know, on the one end, you have the I'm addicted to gambling. I've gone into debt. I've blown my life savings. I put my family at risk. Like, those are the extreme cases. You're like, that's clearly a problem. And then on the other end, like, what is the other end? When it's like, yeah, absolutely, that's fine. This is... It's not even really gambling. It's more spending, enjoyment, like what you said, Ronnie. So, how do you gauge when is it trending in the good direction or the bad direction?
Yeah, great question. To your earlier point, Pipe, like, yeah, it's so volatile in terms of, you look at a sport like baseball or whatever, and everybody says, don't bet baseball. It's a fool's errand. And it probably is, but like, it's so hard to predict, even with all the data that baseball generates, if the Yankees are going to lose to the Mariners on a given night, like it's almost impossible to predict it. So it seems foolish. It seems like gradation's more foolish. So that's one thing. And I think as far as your point, baby, which was good too, like, to the human heart aspect of it, like, I get mad if I lose at anything, and I just don't want to feel mad, so I don't want to put myself in a position to lose, so it's a pretty easy thing to like walk away from in terms of I don't want to ruin a night, and I don't know if that's a moral thing or just a self-scout thyself, know your own kind of psyche sort of thing. But
I think that's good discernment, and I think that's kind of what we're all talking about here is how do you discern. There's different kinds of gambling to where people are looking, you got to ask if something is a master over you or you're becoming enslaved to it, and I think four people coming together on a Friday night saying, hey, we're each going to put $50 in the pot. We're going to play a poker game. Right. We enjoy it. We have a great time. We have great conversations. Mm-hmm. We could do that, or we could all go to a baseball game and spend, twice as much money. Like, just entertainment, yeah, spending time together, enjoying ourselves.
Sure.
I mean, I think when we're talking about it on that particular level, I really kind of put it under like an entertainment category and something that is not controlling your life. But when it starts to control your life, or when it starts to, like what you said, have this ability to sort of like, kind of shift around your emotions and mm-hmm. cause, unfruitful things to surface, using good discernment would say, it's just not for me. I just should probably stay away from it, and that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Pipe, any final thoughts on sports gambling versus the stock market?
Never bet the Twins in the playoffs. Betting baseball in general is
there
foolish.
We go.
Don't trust Vegas odds. They're just trying to move the line in their favor.
Piper, we should have one of those. Remember in like sports magazines when we were kids, there would always be the like black and white ad of like Jim Feist, 1-900, get my predictions for this weekend's
Jimmy
games.
And
it was always this Yeah, this guy in like a bad suit with like slick back hair and like, I've got the winners. You know, we could have one of those ads and, you know, get a little Happy Rant Sports side hustle of the side hustle. I like it. Boys, we've done what we always do on the program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some pretty interesting topics that we thought might be boring initially, but they actually turned out to be interesting. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Has fear stolen your peace? I'm Jennifer Slattery, lead host of the Faith Over Fear podcast, helping you fight your fears and grow your faith. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.